It's time for Michigan's newest sports talk show, Mitt Madness.
And here he goes. Defense wins championship.
Michigan sports talk from here in Battle Creek. The latest stories, the biggest games, all across the Mitten State.
That's not something to play with.
Streaming live and on demand on the 95.3 WBCK app. Here are your hosts, Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes.
Hello there, good morning. It is Mitten Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes set to talk Michigan sports for the next hour. We've got a lot to get into. Some college ball makes its way into the conversation for the first time this season, but a huge game from Thursday night is where we will get started, with the Detroit Lions picking up another divisional win, the fourth of the season, and this one over the Green Bay Packers on a last-second Bates field goal, and we'll get into that in just a minute. But DJ, how's it going, man?
Well, I am amazing. let me say that again. I am amazing. I'm feeling absolutely amazed.
I get it.
Because Michigan has me through the roof right now on multiple stance points. I'm going to a wedding this weekend, so I'm really excited about that. Out in Long Island, and I mean, lacrosse is back. This is my favorite part of the year with all the sports that are rolling. I went to the Red Wings game and got a sweet quarter zip. Like, last weekend was great to me, and this upcoming weekend should be great as well.
You wouldn't even know that the Packers just lost a heartbreaking game against the
who? The who? We ain't talking about NFL right now.
Right. Hey, you just ride that wave of beating Ohio State for the fourth straight year and making them sweat as they head into the playoffs. Like, that's all you had to do. That's all you had to do. We'll talk about the game here in just a little bit. We're going to get started with the Lions, because that, you know, to us, that just happened as we're recording on Friday morning, and you're listening on Saturday, gearing up for a big conference championship day in college football. The Detroit Lions, man, there were times in this game where I thought that they were definitely going to lose, and prime example was the only fourth down that they did not convert that was on like their own 30-yard line. Packers don't take advantage of that situation. But again, like the Packers were able to run the ball extremely well. Josh Jacobs, 18 carries, 66 yards, 3 touchdowns. And the Lions are decimated defensively. 13 players just from the defense alone are on injured reserve, and no other franchise has more than 7 across the board. Like, it's kind of absurd that this is what's happening to the Lions. And then, you know, Aleem McNeil goes out during this game. Brian Branch was out for a little bit during this game. But then guys step up, guys that you've literally never heard of before start coming out of the woodworks and having huge games. Jack Campbell is stepping up. You've got guys like Trevor Nowoski and Quan Alexander, who just came in off the street. Jamal Adams, who just came in off the street. Pat O'Connor was getting shout outs left and right from Kirk Herbstreit. Like, impressive showing from the Lions to get to 12-1 for the first time in franchise history, and to extend the longest winning streak in franchise history up to 11 against the Packers in their own house. They're one step closer, DJ, to locking in the first seed in the NFC picture and securing home field advantage.
Yeah, I just want to say that I want to be happy as a Packers fan that we were in this game, and a few mistakes, this is a win for us. Yeah. As a Packers fan, we played phenomenal football last night, and it makes me feel like we are actually progressing toward being that team that we want to be as the organization. And there's a chance that this Packers team will do very well in the playoffs, and we could see the Lions again come NFC Championship game at Ford Field, like possibly, you know, last year that was the case. That may actually be reality this year. My pockets will definitely be crying about it, but it would be, you know, amazing to see that. And in that same retro guard, the Lions are the best team in the NFL at this moment,
without a doubt.
If you're able to not have half your defense available and you still go out and win a game by three against a good offense, this isn't an offense that can't score. This is an offense that put up 31 points last night and has put up 31 points multiple times this year. And you went out, like you said, with guys right off the street, injured guys, second and third string guys, basically, because none of your starters are out there. The one true edge rushing starter that you had yesterday got hurt during the game.
Yeah.
And you still Zarius won this Smith game.
Left a couple of times, didn't he?
I was thinking of Aleem McNeil, who didn't come back after he left that game. No.
Well, he left, came back, and then left again.
And then didn't come back.
Yeah.
So it's a scenario where you literally are dropping like flies, yet you're still being uberly successful. Lions fans have nothing to worry about, in my opinion.
No.
I think you're going to get healthier over the next couple of weeks as long as you can stay healthy heading into the playoffs. Everything has to go through Ford Field, and that is a scary place to play football right now.
I contend strongly that last year, if they don't have to go to San Francisco, they're probably headed to the Super Bowl. This year, if all of their playoff games are at Ford Field, the NFC is screwed. You are not coming through Detroit, man. It's not happening. And this team is special, but it's because of the guys who aren't a part of that core of Goff, Montgomery, Gibbs, St. Brown, you know, Penei Sewell, Laporta, you know, all the star players. They've got guys like Tim Patrick, who hasn't been productive in the NFL for over 2 years because of injury. He comes in, gets a game ball because he caught six passes for 43 yards and two touchdowns on a down night for Amon-Ra St. Brown. That's the kind of stuff you need. And then, of course, like all the guys we mentioned defensively who stepped up in this, it's a very promising sign for Lions fans that this team is as beat up as they are and they can look that good on a Thursday night. I understand, like, the Packers and the Lions both had a full week, but that is wildly, wildly impressive, and it's something that they've got to carry with them moving forward because it really doesn't get much better than that than to get that kind of win over a division rival and set yourself up well in the college football to the NFL playoffs. Back to college football, though, because that's where I was heading on the computer screen.
Start with the guys in Lansing.
Oh, you want to start with the guys in Lansing? Okay.
Yeah.
You're going to start that off while I look for the game sheet.
I don't have a ton to talk about here. You had an opportunity at the end of this year to play a more favorable schedule for you. Rutgers is a very good football team. Not saying they're not. They went out, and they have been playing well all year, but Michigan State was in a position to win that game and have themselves in one of the lower end bowl games being 6-6, and they went out and squandered it. And they didn't just like lose by a touchdown. They went out and squandered this game.
Yeah.
If you are a State fan, you gotta be upset at what the Spartans did toward the tail end of the year, allowing you guys to fall out of, you know, contention and for a bowl game. You guys easily could have been bowl eligible. You let it slip right through your fingers. But I do still think they had a pretty solid season for first year with all the turnover, the new coaching and everything. Michigan State's headed in the right direction. You still have some more work to do.
Well, and keep in mind, Jonathan Smith gets one more year, one more summer with Aiden Childs, who had, you know, he was very up and down. The entire team, though, was up and down because this is a team that had like 40 some odd new players on the roster. This is a team that knew it was in for a rigorous season, and they stood up to most challenges rather well. I think they only had like two losses like this all year. Last year, that was not the case. Last year, they were getting rolled up almost every single week. But yeah, I agree that result against Rutgers is only surprising in the deficit. Rutgers is a little bit better than a lot of people give them credit for just because they're a average Big Ten team, which is still really, really good. Like, Rutgers is kind of getting into the Arkansas of the SEC territory, which is not a bad place to be, to be honest with you. Both teams, though, just looking for some consistency. All right, we're not going to talk about the game in 2 minutes. So you want to just take an early break, and then we'll come back with a little bit extra time to talk about Michigan and Ohio State. We'll do that next here on Mitten Madness, 95.3. Here on Mitten Madness, 95.3 WBCK, Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes. The game, Michigan 13, Ohio State 10. This was a matter of who packed the lunch pail, who tightened their chin strap, who put on the jock strap the tightest and went out there and played the toughest football. And for 60 minutes, it was the Michigan Wolverines. There were some times there where Ohio State was able to figure things out and make some plays, but they could not be consistent in any way, and they just kind of were out-physical, is a popular term in college football these days. Michigan went out there and just turned around. Davis Warren threw the ball 16 times, completed 9 passes for 62 yards, threw 2 pretty bad interceptions. But yet the game plan was just I formation, turn around, and give it to Mullings over and over and over and over again. And it worked. It worked because Michigan was simply tougher, DJ.
Partially. The real answer to why they won the fourth straight, the other three, simply that. They're a tougher team. They won the fourth straight this year because of ego and the phrase, don't fix what ain't broke.
Mm.
Ego, because Ryan Day cannot get over what Jim Harbaugh said about him not being a tough coach and his team not being tough. That is a Ryan Day thing that he can't get over. And it is really costing them big time.
But it shows up every year.
And it shows up every year. This year it showed up because he went away from what works.
Yeah.
He stopped doing something that wasn't broken. You have stretched every team out by going into the spread offense, pro-style offense, and throwing the ball around all day, forcing them into single coverage situations where your best receivers get to take advantage of that. Michigan was without their number one defensive back and the best defensive back in the country, and you barely threw the ball. You tried to
33
run
passes.
It.
They barely completed passes. 19 of 33.
Listen. You look at the rest of their games. Will Howard's throwing more than 33 passes. Yeah. He's throwing almost 50. He's throwing almost 50 passes.
He's throwing
a
lot more consistently, too. You got to give the guy easy passes, too.
Everybody knows how the passing game goes. Your first 5-6 passes, slant, hitch, little bubble screen, you know, a drag route. You do the easy stuff across the middle, get them in a rhythm, get the offense going, you know, get the passing game where you would like it to be, and then you start to unload. His first pass was like 15 yards down the field.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay. Like, I mean, I wasn't complaining about it. I was happy as a Michigan fan, but
make a statement.
It didn't make any sense that they were not running that spread pro-style offense that they ran the entire year that worked for them. That got you here at 11-1.
Well, I think
that got you here at 11-1, and you just totally went away from that.
I wonder if Ryan Day doesn't think his team was tougher than it had been in years past because the running game that they do have. Well, yeah, they've made their bread and butter by just looking for number four. Say Jeremiah Smith is out there somewhere.
I say it's a good mix.
But Judkins and Trayshawn, like, those are two of the three best running backs in the country.
And it's a lot harder to defend those running backs when you have to worry about defending the pass at all times. They allowed Michigan to not have to worry about defending the pass because they were trying to run it down their throats. You didn't come with that same philosophy you did the rest of the season, which was, we're going to run this pro-style offense. The first couple drives, we're going to force you to respect our passing game and spread you out in your defensive backfield. And then we're going to start running the ball through your zones and everything because we have the space to do it, and you have to react to that. They came out and played Michigan and said, 22 up the gut, about 40 times. That's not good. Nobody's beaten Michigan at Michigan's own game.
Yeah.
You got to do something different. And what has always separated Ohio State and kept them better than Michigan was the passing game.
They took advantage of having a quality passing game and then would mix their run into that, which made it difficult to defend both the pass and the run. Same thing last year with Michigan. Having J.J. McCarthy there, who could throw a consistent pass down the field, forced teams to watch Colston Loveland and Roman Wilson and Morris and all these other guys. So then when they handed off to Blake, Blake already had 5 yards to use before he got touched, and now he's off and running. Same philosophy this year for Judkins and Henderson and what they have in the Ohio State backfield. They just didn't do that against Michigan,
yeah.
And it led to a loss.
I think really and truly, if you're a Michigan fan, you look at this game and you say, well, yeah, this season was a wash, but look at the past week that this team has had. They flip the number one player in the country, Bryce Underwood, to come play quarterback for them next year and beyond. They beat Ohio State. Ohio State's going to the college football playoff, but they're not going to the Big Ten championship. They are not going to get a first round bye. They are going to have to go about this thing the hard way. And by the way, if they're one and done in the playoffs, Ryan Day might just be out of there. And I'm convinced if Ohio State is one and done in the playoffs, Ryan Day's fired. Because it's too clear. Like you mentioned, it's the past 3 years, maybe more so than this year, but the Bucs are not tough enough to beat Michigan. And it's bizarro world because Michigan this year just was talent depleted and they lost 5 games because of it. And these Buckeyes are insanely talented. And yet here they are 10-2 and heading to the playoffs, but not with a lot of positivity. I mean, do you, as a Michigan fan, do you kind of retroactively hope that Ohio State does well enough in the playoffs for Ryan Day to preserve his job? Or is it just, man, screw him. You know, whatever makes it worse for them.
it's a very weird situation. Because I do think that we have a one-up on Ryan Day and that as long as he's there, Ohio State will have a very tough time beating Michigan.
Yeah.
But do I want them to be successful? No.
Well, I didn't say them go win the Natty or even go to the Natty.
But I don't think he stays unless they win a Natty. Like,
right.
You know, so it's like, do I want them to be successful so we can continue beating them? Or like I never want Ohio State. I am a Big Ten guy through and through.
I know.
I'm a Big Ten guy because that's the country I grew up in. I've watched all these teams. I understand their philosophies and everything. Those people, since I can't say the other word I'd like to say, are the only ones that have never received any type of cheer from me whatsoever. I don't care if they're playing Bama, yep. Notre Dame, Michigan State. It does not matter. They do not get a cheer. But I would cheer for Bama to beat Notre Dame in a national championship. Please. I'd cheer for Michigan State to go beat anybody else on the planet as long as they're not beating Michigan. Ohio State gets no crumbs from me. So, no, I don't want them to be successful, but I do want Ryan Day to still be standing across Sherrone Moore next year at the Big House when this game happens again in the middle of the season, which I'll get into at a later time.
Right. Well, you know me. I'm not rooting for other SEC teams unless it creates chaos. Speaking of which, South Carolina, Clemson last week. Little preview for picks that we've got coming up. Those conference championship games, we are going to pick them. If we have time, we can go ahead and start talking Michigan and Michigan State basketball because things are heating up. There, the Spartans are 7-2. The Wolverines are 7-1. DJ, I'm going to give the floor to you. You have watched way more college basketball than I have to this point in the season. What's standing out to you about both these teams? I mean,
as far as Michigan State, they have been absolutely fantastic so far this year. And the big thing is that they're still scheduling and playing the top competition in the country and being successful at doing so. They have 2 losses this year, but they're 2 quad 1 losses, which are going to be huge. You know, when you can go out and play the best competition in the country and be close or win those games, it pays dividends later in the year when you're into Big Ten conference play, you're in that Big Ten tournament, or you're even in the national tournament.
So I'm really excited to see that Michigan State still has Tom Izzo and he's still recruiting the best talent in the country to keep them at an up and up as they're 8-1 or 7-2 on the year so far. Michigan, on the other hand, Dusty May has completely revitalized my faith in the Michigan basketball team and their organization. They're 7-1 on the year at the moment. They have two ranked wins. A 25-point win over number 22 Xavier while you're unranked is huge. And then you go out on the road and beat number 11 Wisconsin by three, and you got 2 7-footers running the pick and roll while you're still bringing in talent around them. And the ball handler literally looks like one of the best guards I've ever seen as a 7-footer. It's insane how good his ball handling skills are. But truly, these are just two teams that have done the work in the offseason and are looking to be competitive throughout the entire country, and they're off to a great start.
Yeah, it's exciting times in college basketball. We were talking in the office just about Big Ten basketball in general. It's exciting. These big games, these big wins for both Michigan and Michigan State, who kind of started on the outside looking in, having to prove after last year's struggles that they can get back to the top of the conference. And it's exciting to see what they're doing and how they're doing it with these big wins and cutting it close in the big time losses that can still help them at the end of the season, like you're saying. But we'll stop right there. And when we come back, it's time to check in on what's going on with the Red Wings. No, things are going not quite as well as we would hope there. And the Pistons, where everything is all about perspective. That next on Mitten Madness, 95.3 WBCK.
Detroit sports fans, Wolverines and Spartans alike, this is your sports show, Mitten Madness, with Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes on 95.3 WBCK.
We're back here on Mitten Madness, 95.3 WBCK. Jacob Harrison and Deshaun Hughes. Let's check in on what's going on with the Detroit Pistons and Red Wings. We'll start with the Pistons, who are on a three-game losing streak. They now stand at 9-15 on the season. Later tonight, they will travel out to New York, to the Garden, take on the Knicks. That one's not going to be particularly easy, but DJ, just the kind of the vibe of this team, like I said, heading into the break, it's all about perspective. Just a 10-point loss to Boston, some uglier losses mixed in with Milwaukee and Philly. Those ones got a little bit out of hand, but hey, I mean, a big road win, 24 points over Indiana. There's some spurts here where they're putting together things that fans can get excited about, and that's what this season's all about.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Pistons are in a far better position than they were at this time last year. I think they're in a far better position than a lot of people thought they would be. I think they're in a far better position than they thought they would be. If you told them 24 games into the year that they would only be five wins away from the amount of wins they had last year, I think they'd tell you that you're crazy. Be like, hold on, we won 29 out of our first 24 games, or we've won 9 out of our first 24 games. Nah, cap, no way. But you look at the record, they're 9-15. That's exactly what they have done. They've come out and they've played pretty solid at the beginning of the year. When you look at their scores, I think they have a couple bad losses. The Bucks loss the other night was a little tough. I mean, 21 is rough. You drop a 24 to the Pacers, you beat the Wizards by 20. That's huge. We're going to have a real problem there. And then the only other blowout loss they had was a 30-point loss to the Knicks. Every other game besides that has been within 12 single digits and at most 12 points, which 12 points is only 4 possessions. That's not a blowout.
Yeah.
You know, 6 possessions at most, depending on how things play out, but that's not a blowout. They're competing with every team that they have played with so far, including teams that were in the NBA Finals last year, teams that were playoff teams, teams that made it to the Eastern Conference or the Western Conference Finals. They are playing good competition and being successful while doing it. They're still just young and figuring out exactly how this new group meshes together. When you bring in guys like Tobias Harris, who have been in the league for a little bit, you got new rookies in. Fontecchio is back and playing as well. So there's a lot of moving pieces early in this season, but to already have 9 wins under the belt, you are almost positive to surpass your win total from last year, and they're right along pace to at least double, like we have talked about for the majority of this year.
On the other side of that coin, there at Little Caesars Arena is the Detroit Red Wings. 4-game losing streak. They're down to 10-12 now, sitting near the bottom of the Atlantic Division, which, again, is still a very tight-knit division. A lot of these teams are just 2 or 3 games away from 500. That said, teams like Tampa Bay, Florida, and Toronto are starting to break away, and a loss to a team like Boston does not help. Overtime loss mixed in there as well in this 4-game losing streak. Tonight they take on the Avalanche. They host, huge game, huge rivalry game, and we'll make the pick on that game in the next segment. But DJ, this is not, every time we're like, okay, maybe here's the avenue to get back to where we thought you'd be, get there, they're not doing it. And now a 4-game losing streak, it's tough right now for these Red Wings to get some traction.
Yeah, I mean, it's more than just, it's not as deep as it looks. Truly, after being at the game on Sunday, this team can score.
Yeah.
Scoring is not an issue for this team. The defense isn't even really an issue for this team. Goaltending, absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
Some of the best.
Then what's the issue, DJ? Because those are the 3 phases of hockey.
Yes. The real issue for this team is neutral zone and defensive zone turnovers.
Yep.
You're creating easy opportunities for other teams or creating scoring opportunities. Like, I was there at the game against the Canucks, and literally they turned it over 12 times in the defensive zone in the whole game. And that's not counting the neutral zone turnovers.
Yeah.
Just 12 in your own zone. That's automatically 12 good shots. Even if that person picks up the puck right away and shoots it, that is 12 good shots in your zone. And then you're giving up more in the neutral zone, which is where you're meant to take care of the puck the most. That is what's costing this team, is they're not able to take care of the puck in their own zone and the neutral zone, which is creating very easy opportunities for the opposition.
I mean, that largely just comes down to mentality and cohesion, right? I mean, this is a relatively veteran squad. Not to imply that they've been, you know, at war with one another for, you know, 5 years or anything like that. It's still a stitched together roster in many ways, but I mean, you've got veteran presence out there. You've got leaders. You've got guys who know what they're doing. And these same guys last year were not having these same kind of issues. And in fact, you've improved on some of those issues. Scoring was not a problem last year, but preventing the other team from scoring was a little bit more of an issue. And consistency was an issue, but I don't know. It's frustrating. It's still very early in the season, for sure. There's time to work out the kinks. I mean, you're going to be dealing with national stuff very soon. Then before we know it, it's All-Star break time and whatnot. But I mean, the Red Wings got to get this thing figured out. You do not want to you don't want to lose a game to Boston and to Ottawa, and now you're sitting below 500 and they're climbing, and now you've got to go face your rival in Colorado, and you're hosting them, and there's so much animosity in this game, and a lot of things just go sideways. You just don't want to find yourself in a trap, in a spiral, in a way, you know, that it's a hole that you can't dig yourself out of. And that's where my concern lies with the Detroit Red Wings. All right, well, we'll take a break there, and we'll come back, and we're going to pick all of these conference games, conference championship games in college football, and more here on Mitt and Madness. 95.3 WBCK.
95.3 WBCK.
Mitt and Madness,
It's 95.3 WBCK. Jake Parrison and Dejon Hughes. It's time to make picks. It's a fun weekend for it. Conference championships, cross college football. Unfortunately, we don't know what happened with Boise State and UNLV. We surely enjoyed the game, though. I promise you that. But we'll pick all four of those games, and that'll kind of give you a hint as to what we want to see in the college football playoff. Next week, we'll probably debate a little bit about the outcome of who's in and who's out in the college football playoff, and gear up for Army Navy, by the way. That's going to be a lot of fun. All right, DJ, update us on the standings, man.
After last week, you had a 4-2 week. I had a 3-3 week. Anybody who's paying attention knows that that knots us up, as you were just one game behind. 49-37 is the record for both of us heading into the week.
And that was a fun week last week. Those upsets came in clutch. We both just missed one more upset. If either of us would have picked Syracuse, either we're tied or I have a two-game lead, and that would be a lot of fun. But we're gearing up, and we're getting at it here. Let's start in the NFL. The Los Angeles Chargers and the Kansas City Chiefs in an AFC West matchup. The Chiefs, DJ, they're 11-1, but a lot of folks think that they're a bunch of frauds, and these Chargers are catching some momentum. Jim Harbaugh's got Justin Herbert playing extremely well, and they're surging a little bit here in recent weeks. Big win over Atlanta, tight loss to Baltimore, big wins over Cincy, Tennessee, and Cleveland. Those are not fantastic teams by any means, but does garner some momentum. Kansas City hasn't exactly had the toughest schedule in the world either. The Chiefs, they open as 3.5-point favorites. They're now 4-point favorites and have a 60.9 chance to win at home. DJ, who you got, the Chargers or the Chiefs?
I hate that I'm saying this right now. I really do. The Chargers have been great. They've been a phenomenal football team so far this year. Justin Herbert looks to be like he's on the outside of that MVP conversation, really knocking on the door. But Ladd McConkey, questionable. No clue if he's going to play or not. J.K. Dobbins is on the IR and will not be playing.
Scheduled tweet.
So this one's tough for me. But the deciding factor is the NFL continues to cheat for the Chiefs. So I'm just going to err on the side of caution here and take the Kansas City Chiefs to beat the Chargers at home.
Man, went full conspiracy. All right, the Chargers have lost their last six games against the Chiefs on Sunday night road trips to Arrowhead. I think they break the streak. I really do. I think Justin Herbert is playing at an elite level. His numbers aren't mind-blowing like Josh Allen's and Jared Goff's and Lamar Jackson's, but he is playing some of the best football of his career. I understand J.K. Dobbins is out. Ladd McConkey's not the end of the world. I like what the Chargers have been doing recently, and I have not enjoyed what the Chiefs have been doing recently. It'll be tight. It'll be close. Chiefs can win the game, but I think the Chargers will.
That takes us to the gridiron again. This time we're going to the college game. One of the most important weeks of the season. Conference championship week is here. There's a ton of games loaded up in front of us, and I will start with one that has some implications, but maybe the fewest. The Big 12 championship, presented by Dr. Pepper. This game is going to be played at AT&T Stadium down in Texas. Iowa State, 16th in the country, 10-2. Arizona State, 15th in the country, 10-2. They're giving Iowa State a 55% chance to win this game. Do Mr. Beck and the Cyclones have enough to take down Skatebow and this electric Arizona State offense?
Yeah, I know folks like some Scatabow or Skatebow,
whatever
you pronounce it. I watched Arizona State put the bang thing on Arizona last week, and that kid looked really, really good. Here's the problem, though. Iowa State may be the boring, because Campbell, the way he runs this program, they've just been right there at the upper echelon. Dude, they're more built for this moment. Like, we're talking about the team that really kind of gave Oklahoma the most fits in their last few years in the Big 12. Iowa State is what gave you talents like Brandon Ayuk went to Arizona State, like the quarterback at San Francisco, Brock Purdy. Iowa State's got some specialness to it, and I think Campbell is, Matt Campbell, the way he coaches his team, is more prepared for the situation. I am going to go with the Cyclones to win this thing and head to the CFP.
Well, there's our first flip game of the week. This is the one. Ain't no way I'm going against Arizona State and Scatabo. And that man run the football.
That man run the football.
Like, he angry.
Like, hey, he's fun to watch.
I know he's not the best running back in college football today due to the craziness that we have going on in the state of Idaho.
Yeah.
He's a close second with the way he runs the ball. But the other thing for me here is Arizona State has been on a roll. Mm-hmm. Recently, they haven't lost a game since October 19th, and before that, they hadn't lost a game since September 21st. They lost to Texas Tech by 8, which I think is kind of a bad loss. And then you lost to Cincinnati by 10, another rough loss. But everybody in the Big 12 beat up on everybody. Everybody's got a loss. And when you look at the last, when you look at the last 5 games, you blow out Oklahoma State by 21. You win a very tough game against UCF, which many people don't realize how close UCF was to being in the mix of the craziness that was the Big 12. You knock off Kansas State by 10 in a ranked matchup. You turn around, you knock off previously undefeated or one loss by BYU by a few points to keep yourself alive. And then you go out and absolutely throttle your rival in Arizona 49-7. Yeah, I'm trusting you to win a 6th game in a row after you won your last 5 like that. Give me the Sun Devils.
And people like me thought Arizona might win the Big 12. And people like me were wrong. That said, Iowa State's loss, 1-point loss to Texas Tech, 9-point loss to Kansas, and Kansas did some dirty work at the end of the season. Let me tell you, they were better at the end of the season than they were at the start.
They both lost to Texas Tech.
Right? Tech's got to be feeling a certain kind of way, right? Let's head out to the ACC, but keep it in Big 12 country. The SMU Mustangs. Damn, those ponies have taken over the ACC in their first year, 11-1. They will take on the Clemson Tigers at Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte, North Carolina. And I think this is going to be a really, really fun game. Clemson, man, they did all they could against South Carolina. The Cox just came from behind and made it work. But SMU has been one of my favorite teams to watch all year. I know that they don't have that standout top 25 victory, but they have been so impressive all year long, and I think they get it here, DJ. What say you? The Clemson Tigers, the 2-point favorites who are now down to 2.5-point dogs. Who you got?
I see a pretty impressive resume in front of me for SMU. Their one loss this year is a 3-point loss to BYU. They do have a win over ranked 22 Louisville, 34-27 earlier in the year on October 5th. They also took down number 18 Pittsburgh, who had been rolling at the time by 23 points in early November. You beat Stanford by 30. You beat Duke in overtime. You throttled Florida State 42-16. Like, this is a team that can put points on the board and win. You beat a tough Mountain West opponent in Nevada 29-24 to open up the year. That right there, I think, was the point to them where they were like, okay, we can kind of do a little thing. And you win 59-7 the next week. You lose by 3 to BYU, and then you don't lose again. They definitely have a shot to take down Clemson, and I think they will. I think that their offense is simply just too high-powered for Clemson coming off of a tough loss to South Carolina, who also had a really good offense. The defense has been the true question mark for Clemson this year, and SMU is going to test that. I think SMU comes out on top.
Yeah, if you liked what South Carolina was able to do against Clemson, just keep in mind, South Carolina struggled for like 90% of that game. they really did. Clemson's defense answered the challenge, and then South Carolina was too much for them. SMU's offense is considerably a more problematic thing for Clemson to handle. I will preface that I want SMU to win this thing because I want there to be zero doubt and zero argument around the whole Alabama getting in over them sort of thing. I do not want Alabama in over SMU if SMU loses this. So just leave zero doubt, SMU. Go out and win this damn thing, please. All of Tuscaloosa and the state of Alabama is begging you. Go win this game. We don't want to do it to you.
Well, that takes us to a game where I don't know who's cheering for who. The Big Ten Championship game going down at Lucas Oil Stadium, as always, in Indianapolis, is welcoming a longstanding team that seems to never really get here and the number three Penn State Nittany Lions at 11-1, and a brand new conference team in the 12-0 number one Oregon Ducks. This matchup predictor is about to blow your mind. 53.6% chance for Penn State to win this game.
Stop.
Does Drew Aller, James Franklin, and Nick Singleton have enough in their navy and white to take down the flashiest dressing team in all of college football and Dylan Gabriel?
Hell no. Bro, you know who is more pissed off than the folks in Columbus, Ohio, that Ohio State lost that game? The folks out in Happy Valley, Pennsylvania. They didn't want to go to Indy. They wanted a bye week. They were already in the playoffs. They could lose this game badly enough and not go because they don't have much of a resume. They don't want to be in this game, and they don't have the firepower to beat Oregon. I'm sorry. Oregon's going to put the bang thing on them. I'm not sure Penn State even goes to the tournament because of this game. They didn't want to be here. They didn't expect to be here, and they're not ready for it.
I'll keep this one short and sweet for me. You know how it gets with teams that haven't given me a reason to pick against them? I can't. Oregon has given me zero reason to pick against them since their first. Now, beginning of the year, we really questioned it when, you know, the Idaho game was close. The Boise State game was close. After that, they really started to separate themselves from competition. They've been handling business. Their closest game since then was the Ohio State game where they won by one, and then they beat Wisconsin by three. Other than that, they have absolutely throttled everyone else. I expect things to continue being well for them, and they'll win the Big Ten championship.
Penn State should just load up on potatoes. I think that'll give them the edge they need. All right, SEC championship time. Texas is in it. 11-1. Bevo's not. Bevo's banned from Mercedes-Benz Stadium. So even if Texas runs the gauntlet, goes to the national championship, Bevo can't come along. UGA's not banned. Georgia gets to bring their little bulldog every single year, and they're used to being here. The 10-2 Georgia Bulldogs have faltered a few times and looked bad doing it. The loss to Ole Miss was bad. The loss to Alabama, while they got it close again, was bad. 8 overtimes to beat Georgia Tech. UMass put up 21 points. The Tennessee game was tough. Georgia's in a weird, weird spot, but there are some aspects to Carson Beck's game that have looked considerably better. But the Longhorns are 11-1. They are on a considerable roll, and they have handled everybody that they have faced in recent weeks. DJ, who do you got in the SEC championship? This opened as a straight, even matchup, toss-up, and the Longhorns moved out to a 2.5-point favorite.
Georgia, this one's pretty simple for me. You can't go out and beat someone 30-15 and double them up on the scoreboard earlier in the year and expect me to have a lot of confidence in that losing team to come out and win. Do I think this game will be closer than that one? Yes. Do I think Texas will show up? Yes. But I also think Texas still gets in with a loss.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know that Georgia does. And that's going to be in Georgia's mind. Georgia's going to come out and play this game hard, and they know that they have to win to guarantee their spot. That extra motivation, I believe, pushes them over the top. But I think that's the same motivation that has Texas competing at a higher level in this game and having the motivation of possibly pushing out Georgia so that there's not three SEC teams that they have to battle with. It's just one, or I guess two, because if Georgia wins, Texas is in, Georgia's in, and probably Bama too.
Yeah.
So now there's three SEC teams. If you can beat one of them and possibly push them out, you're going to try that. So Texas is going to be ready to play, but I think Georgia comes out on top.
I agree with a lot of what you just said there. Right? Georgia, they won this game on the road early in the season. Now they're playing in their backyard in Atlanta. That's a home game for Georgia. And like I said, Georgia's been here before. Texas hasn't been to a conference championship in a while, dog. Like, you know, like last year notwithstanding, but like one that actually is insanely difficult. Like Georgia, this is what Georgia lives for. And the fact that if they lose, they might not be in and Alabama would be in instead of them is weird. Like that's a scenario I can't see playing out. Georgia's going to win this game. Not convincingly. I think this will be the most fun game of the entire weekend, but Georgia's going to win.
Glad we're on the same page there. Last game of the week, we are heading inside. Well, I guess some of these games have been inside too, but nonetheless,
a lot of them have been.
This one is definitely going down inside. Your Red Wings 5-6-2 in Little Caesars Arena. I saw one of those overtime losses. 10-12-4 on the year are welcoming in a bitter rival that we remember from the 90s all too well. The Colorado Avalanche, who are 14-13-0, 7-6-0 on the road. I think the Red Wings have a great chance here being a home game, but do you think they'll be able to stop Mikko Rantanen and Nathan MacKinnon from lighting the lamp and put enough goals in the back of the net? Or do the Avs come in and spoil?
I'm not going to be a homer here. A five-game losing streak sounds kind of ridiculous, but a lot of times when I go the route of there's no way they're going to lose that many games in a row, I'm usually wrong. So, you know what? I hate to say it. I don't want to say it. I would love to flip over to this game and see the Red Wings pull it off. I just don't have a lot of confidence to do that. I'm going to go with Colorado.
Wow. Not surprised. I'm not surprised. That's quality. I'm doing a little bit of quick math here.
Yeah, their goalies are averaging 3.41 goals a game given up combined.
There's one goalie on this team that is above a three, and the other two are far significantly below a three. I said what the problem is. I don't think they have as many neutral zone and defensive zone turnovers in this game. Give me the Red Wings. They're going to win this game, which means we're mixing it up a little bit.
Quite a bit.
We're both going to take SMU. We are both going to take the Chiefs in Georgia. Along with Oregon, you've got Iowa State. I've got Arizona State. I've got the Red Wings. You've got the Avs. It's time for another weekend.
Did you say we both had the Chiefs? I have the Chargers.
Okay.
All right. All squared away. All right. That Chargers-Chiefs game, by the way, it's on BCK tonight, or tomorrow night. Pre-game will get started around 7:30-ish. We also have that SEC championship game between Georgia and Texas. That's on WBCK later today. So be sure to tune in to that pre-game. Let me get over to the schedule properly. Pre-game for that will start at 3. So SEC championship later today, and then Sunday night on WBCK, tomorrow night with the Chargers and the Chiefs. We'll have more games coming up next week as well, but we'll join you next week once we know what the college football playoff field is, and we're going to have plenty to argue about simply because Alabama's going to be in. Sorry, DJ. It's the way it is. Until then, y'all take it easy. We'll see you later.
Join Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. for Mitten Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Miss the show or want to run it back? Stream Mitten Madness on demand on the WBCK app. Sponsored by AirwayCashForJunkCars.com.